Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare, Hare. Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Jaya Prabhupada, 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 Prabhupada. Jayam Vishnupad Paramahamsa Paribraja Kacharja Ashtotarta Shishimad Abhaya Charanarvindam Bhakti Vedanta Swami Maharaj Shil Prabhupada Ki Jai Nantakuri Vaishnava Vrinda Ki Jai Skan Bhivati Sangstava Kacharja Shil Prabhupada Ki Jai Namacharya Shil Haridas Thakur Ki Jai Prem Sikaho Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Shivasadi Gaur Bhakti Vrinda Ki Jai Shri Shri Radha Krishna Gogo Pinath Sham Kundradha Kungiri Govardhan Ki Jai Shri Vrindavan Dham Ki Jai Shri Mathura Dham Ki Jai Shri Dwarka Dham Ki Jai Mayapur Navadi Dham Ki Jai Ganga Maya Jamuna Maya Ki Jai Shrimati Tulsi Devi Bhakti Devi Ki Jai Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai Granthraj Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai All glories to the assembled devotees All glories to the assembled devotees All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. Today we're reading from Srimad Bhagavatam. Canto 4, Chapter 2, entitled Daksha Curses Lord Shiva, text number 30. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Brahmacha Brahmanangschaiva. Brahmacha Brahmanangschaiva. Yad-yuyam parinindata Yad-yuyam parinindata Setum vidharanam pungsam Setum vidharanam pungsam Atapashandamashritaha atapashandamashritaha brahmacha brahmanangscheva yadhyuyam parinindata setum vidharanam pungsam ataha pashandamashritaha brahmacha brahmanangscheva yadhyuyam parinindata setum vidharanam pungsam ataha pashandamashritaha brahmacha brahmanangscheva yadhyuyam parinindata setum vidharanam pumsam atapa shandimashritaha brahmacha brahmanangscheva yadhyuyam parimindata setum vidharanam pumsam atapashandamashritaha brahmacha brahmanangscheva yadhyuyam parimindata setum vidharanam pumsam atapashandamashritaha brahmacha brahmanangscheva yadhyuyam parimindata setum vidharanam pungsa atapashandamashritaha brahmacha brahmanam scheva yadhyuyam parimindata ladies brahmacha brahmanam scheva yadhyuyam parimindata setum vidharanam pungsam atapashandamashritaha brahmacha brahmanam scheva yadhyuyam parimindata Brahma, the Vedas, Cha, and Brahmanam, the Brahmanas, Cha, and Eva, certainly, Yat, because, Yuyam, you, Parinindata, blaspheme, Setum, Vedic principles, vidharanam, holding, pumsam, of mankind, ataha, therefore, Pashandam, atheism, ashritaha, having taken shelter. Bhrigu Muni continued, since you blaspheme the Vedas and the Brahmanas, who are the followers of the Vedic principles, it is understood that you have already taken shelter of the doctrine of atheism. Purport by His Divine Grace, Srila Prabhupada. Bhrigu Muni is cursing Nandishwar. Bhrigu Muni, in cursing Nandishwar, said that not only would they be degraded as atheists because of this curse, but they had already fallen to the standard of atheism because they had blasphemed the Vedas, which are the source of human civilization. Human civilization is based on the qualitative divisions of social order, namely the intelligent class, the martial class, the productive class, and the laborer class. The Vedas provide the right direction for advancing in spiritual cultivation and economic development and regulating the principle of sense gratification so that ultimately one may be liberated from material contamination to his real state of spiritual identification, aham brahmasmi. As long as one is in the contamination of material existence, one changes bodies from the aquatics to the position of Brahma. But the human form of life is the highest perfectional life in the material world. The Vedas give directions by which to elevate oneself in the next life. The Vedas are the mother for such instructions, and the Brahmanas, or persons who are in knowledge of the Vedas, are the father. Thus, if one blasphemes the Vedas and the Brahmanas, naturally one goes down to the status of atheism. The exact word used in Sanskrit is Gnostic, which refers to one who does not believe in the Vedas, but manufactures some concocted system of religion. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has said that the followers of the Buddhist system of religion are Gnostics. In order to establish his doctrine of nonviolence, Lord Buddha flatly refused to believe in the Vedas, and thus later on, Shankaracharya stopped the system of religion in India and forced it to go outside India. Here it is stated, Brahmacha Brahmanam. Brahma means the Vedas. Aham Brahmasmi means I am in full knowledge. The Vedic assertion is that one should think that he is Brahman, for actually he is Brahman. If Brahma, or the Vedic spiritual science, is condemned, then the masters of the spiritual science, the Brahmins, are condemned. Then where does human civilization stand? Bhrigu Muni said, it is not due to my cursing that you shall become atheist. You are already situated in the principle of atheism. Therefore, you are condemned. Om Ajnana Timirandasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Meditam Jena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Mukam Karoti Vachalam Pangum Langayate Girim Yat Kripa Taraham Bande Shri Gurun Dinataranam Paramananda Madhavam Shri Chaitanyeshwaram. So, we see here that Bhrigu Muni is counter-cursing the curses of Nandishwar. Lord Shiva has been insulted, so the follower of Lord Shiva, Nandishwar, has cursed those persons in the sacrifice who sat by and said nothing and did nothing while Daksha blasphemed Lord Shiva. So now Nandishwar is cursing them. And then we see here Bhriga Muni, he's counter-cursing the Lord Shiva and his followers, Lord Shiva's followers. So Bhriga Muni is saying that, you know, you're on the platform of atheism, not because of my curse, but because you are condemning the Brahmins and the Vedas. Therefore, you're already on the platform of atheism. So Srila Prabhupada mentions that the human civilization is, or the Vedas are the actual source of human civilization. he mentions about the intelligent class, the martial class, the productive class, the laborer class. So of course the intelligent class is the Brahminical class of society. And in the body of society, if the society is compared to a body, the Brahmins are compared to the head of the society. And the Kshatriyas were referred to as the martial art, the military, the administrative class. They are compared to the arms. And the Vaishyas, which Prabhupada refers to here as the productive class, they are compared to the belly of the society, the body of society. And the Shudras, are the laborer class, are compared to the legs. So there's a very integral relationship between all of these different classes of society. And one thing that Prabhupada observes right away in this, if you have a body and it may not have arms or legs, but it has to have a head. If you cut off the head of society, immediately the body dies. So therefore the Brahminical order, or the intellect of society, is very important. that's why Bhriga Muni is mentioning the Brahmins. If you're condemning the Brahmins, then you are an atheist. If you're condemning the Vedas, which the Brahmins are expert in, then you're on the platform of atheism. The Brahmins, their duty is to guide society. They're teachers. They teach. They give transcendental knowledge, all kinds of knowledge. There's information in the Vedas of so many different areas of concern. And the Brahmins, they become expert in this, and they teach it to others. The system previously was that the people in the village, everyone lived in villages, and they would send their children to the Brahmins, and the Brahmins would teach them. And when the Brahmins were teaching the children, they would see their nature and mold them in a certain way for the benefit of society. And the Brahmins, when the children came to them, they would bring something from the house as a dakshi, some sabji or some rice, something. You know, everyone in the village is producing. Basically, Vaishyas, they produce. What do they produce? Well, nowadays, they produce cars, air conditioners, MP3 players, computers. This is what they produce. And they trade these things. But that previously wasn't the system. Previously, the system was that Vaishyas, they work the land. And they produce grains, which is what the human body actually needs to sustain itself. anad bhavati bhutani parjanyad anasambhavaha. Right? The human, the body needs grains to exist. So the production, the producers, they would produce grains. And they would take care of cows. So Srila Prabhupada mentions in the Krishna book that previously the standard or measure of one's wealth was how many animals they had and how many and how much grains they had. So the Vaishyas would send their children to the Brahmins for training, and the Brahmins would instruct them, and they would get some of the produce, right? And then that day they would cook up whatever the students brought, and they'd offer it to Shalagram Shila. All the Brahmins would worship in the house Shalagram Shila, Vishnu. And then they would take some of that portion, and the balance they would distribute as prasadam. So at the end of the day, the balance was zero. No stock. Right? And that way the Brahmins maintained a very detached mentality, depending on the Supreme Lord for all the requirements. Then the Shudras are those persons that assist the other classes. Kshatriyas protect, their business is to protect the citizens. And not only the word in Sanskrit for citizens is praja. Praja means those who have taken birth there. So that includes everyone. And nowadays, the citizens includes only the human beings. And everyone else is unprotected. We see the plight of the poor, innocent animals being sent to the slaughterhouses. The government-sponsored slaughterhouses. To be killed for the satisfaction of the uncontrolled tongue. This shouldn't be the case, and previously it wasn't the case. The Kshatriyas would protect everyone, especially the cows. We see in the example of Maharaj Parikshit that when he was roaming in his kingdom and he came upon one Shudra dressed as a king and punishing a cow and a bull, he immediately took up his sword to cut off his head, punish him. So this is the duty of the Kshatriya, is to protect the citizens, which includes everyone who's taken birth in the land. The Vedic system, this is the Vedic system, this is given to us in the Vedas, so that there can be order in society. If society, these systems are there anyway. Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, Chaturvanya maya shrishtam guna karma vibhagashaha. This is something that's created by Krishna, these occupational duties. You're always going to have an intelligent class, an administrative class, a productive class, and a labor class. These things are always going to be there. When Srila Prabhupada went to Russia, he met one Professor Katovsky. So he was saying, "Oh Swamiji, we have classless society." But Prabhupada argued with him. He said, "No, you also have teachers, you have military people, administrative people, you have mercantile people, and you have laborers. So you still have classes within the society. They're always going to be there. Because it's created by Krishna. But the Vedic system is that things are set up in such a way, the intelligent class, Kshatriya class, for systematic life, systematic human life. So human life doesn't become chaotic. Today we have chaos, right? We have democracy. And Prabhupada calls it what? Demon crazy, right? Here we have the Shudras are elected to the highest post, right? Sometimes they're Vaishyas, but mostly they're just Shudras, right? So they can't protect anyone. They can't even protect themselves because they get it into the office by promising the public sense gratification. Vote for me. You'll be happy. Kushrega. Give me the vote. Right? Then they come into power and their whole concentration is their own sense gratification. How to get money. Or how to keep the post. And the benefit of the people is lost. So the people are dissatisfied. And then after some time, what do? They throw him out of the power. And again, they bring in another rascal, Prabhupada says. Some low-class rascal who doesn't know what is good for himself, what to speak of good for others, and they give him the highest post. This is the unfortunate situation that we have in the world today. But previously, the system was not like that. The system was a pious king would be ruling, and he would take direction from the Brahmins. Not that he was thinking, mine. Yeah? Still he had this nirmama consciousness that everything belongs to Krishna. A pious king realizes that. The kingdom is not my kingdom, right? But I'm the representative of the Supreme Lord to manage things on his behalf. So the king would be in this consciousness, not this ownership consciousness, right? Everybody nowadays is in the ownership consciousness. They try to get a little piece of the land and claim it as mine. It's mine. Right? But actually everything belongs to Krishna. And the kings previously would have this mentality. And not only that, but they would take direction from the Brahmins how to manage things. Right? We see so many times in the Ramayana, Dasarath, when he had some question, he would go to the Brahmins and ask them what to do. And he would follow their instructions. Right? So there was this very coordinated relationship between the martial class, the administrative class, and the intellectual class of the Brahmins. The kings would maintain themselves not as the Brahmins. The Brahmins would get something in donation and give things back that they received in donation. But the the kings would take some portion of the production from the Vaishyas. And they would develop a little treasury. They would have a stock of grains, as opposed to the Brahmins who wouldn't keep any stock, the Kshatriyas would. And they would use that to help in the administration of the country, like keeping an army, some administrative set up they would need. And this is the way they would use the taxes that they levied from the people. Now people, we see that the taxes are levied and it's described in the Bhagavatam that things will get so bad with taxes that people will just go to the forest to get away from all the taxation. They'll go and live in caves just to get away from the demoniac government. That's where we're headed for. Right? People are overburdened. Sales tax, VAT tax, income tax, this tax, that tax. Right? There was a song by George Harrison called The Tax Man. He said, if you walk, they'll tax your feet. If you sit, they'll tax your seat. Because they're the tax man. Right? And actually, you're not working for yourself. You're working for the tax man. This is the unfortunate situation when people become atheists. They don't accept the Vedic system. Right? Now, the other thing that Srila Prabhupada mentions in the purport about the Vedas, why they're the source of human civilization, is that they give very nice direction about spiritual cultivation. And economic development, regulating the principles of sense gratification, and ultimately liberation. So this is dharma, artha, kama, and moksha. These principles are also elaborated in the Vedic literatures. Dharma, you know, religious, spiritual life. This is essential for the human being. Without this, human life becomes no better than animal life. Srila Prabhupada mentions again and again, the uniqueness about human life is the fact that they can understand about spirituality. They can engage in religious activities. This separates the humans from the animals. So dharma. And then artha, economic development. This should be done in a particular way according to the varnas. One should be in a particular varna and develop that economic development. Everyone needs the necessities of life, and therefore economic development is required. Because if we, as long as we have a material body, so a certain amount of sense gratification is required. So dharma, artha, kam. It's a process. All these processes are described there in the Vedic literatures. But over and above that, to elevate oneself, dharma, artha, kam, moksha, to elevate oneself to a higher platform. These are the prescriptions that are mentioned in the Vedas for our gradual elevation. Dharma is simply not meant for artha and kam. These things are required because we have a material body, but they're also we need the elevation to become uplifted. As long as one is in the material body, one has to suffer the pangs of birth, death, old age, and disease. So the Vedic literatures ultimately are helping us to come out of this cycle of birth and death and suffering. So therefore, the Vedas are considered the source of human civilization. Those who are against the Vedas, they're Gnostic, atheist. Lord Buddha is mentioned here because he preached against the Vedas. Prabhupada says he flatly refused to believe in the Vedas. So we see also that Lord Buddha is one of the incarnations. And Jayadev Goswami is singing, Buddha Sharira Jhajagadi Shade. So it's explained that because of the prescriptions in the Vedas, people were becoming atheistic, they were becoming materialistic, and they were using the excuse of the Vedic literatures for mistreating the animals. And they were slaughtering animals in the name of the Vedas and indulging in meat eating. So seeing that the people had fallen from the real meaning of the Vedas and were using the Vedas simply as an excuse for sense gratification and meat eating and causing great suffering to the innocent animals, Lord Buddha denied in the Vedas. He refused to believe in the Vedas. He preached against following the Vedic literatures. So therefore, although Lord Buddha is an incarnation of Krishna, we don't accept Lord Buddha's philosophy. We don't accept his philosophy. In the West, it's very popular for people to follow Buddhist philosophy. Once the Buddhists, they came to Lord Chaitanya. He was traveling in South India, and he was going from village to village, preaching Harinam Sankirtan, and delivering people wherever he went. On one particular occasion in South India, a Buddhist guru and his disciples met Lord Chaitanya. So Lord Chaitanya, I mean, normally for a devotee, they don't engage in logic and argument. That's not their business, right? And we see Lord Chaitanya, in this particular instance, though, he discussed with this Buddhist guru. And the Buddhists, they have these 9 different basic principles. And Lord Chaitanya soundly, logically defeated all of his arguments. But he was thoroughly smashed by Lord Chaitanya, this Buddhist guru. So he went back with his disciples, and they began to make a plot against the Lord. So the next day they came, and they had this tali, right? And it was all kinds of nasty, untouchable food. And they gave it to Lord Chaitanya, and they said, "Here's some maha prasadam." So as soon as they said that, a huge bird, like what they call a kike in India, a hawk, he came down and grabbed the plate of untouchable food, and he flew up. And when he flew up, all that nasty food fell on the heads of these Buddhists. And then the bird let go of the plate, and it came down and hit the Buddhist guru right in the head. And he cut his head and he fell unconscious. So the disciples of the Buddhist guru, seeing this, they fell at Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's feet. And they began to glorify the Lord as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And they begged the Lord to deliver their guru, save him, because he was unconscious, he was lying on the ground out. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, "Okay, you go in his ear and chant the name of Krishna and Hari. Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Ram Ram Hare." So when the disciples chanted in the ear of their unconscious guru, he immediately woke up and he began to chant, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Ram Ram." So the people were astonished that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu had delivered these Buddhists and they were chanting the holy name of Krishna. So Chaitanya Charitamrita describes that just as a fun, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu then disappeared and no one could find him. So we don't accept the Buddhist conclusion. Prabhupada mentions in the purport that, you know, our business is not, you can never understand the absolute truth through logic, through argument. You can't understand the absolute truth in that way. But as preachers in the Krishna consciousness movement, we have to be ready to face up many opponents to our philosophy, and therefore we should be expert and knowing how to defeat them through argument and through logic. We see in the example of Srila Prabhupada and his Guru Maharaj, the giving the true conclusion, and sometimes they would use logic and argument to establish it. Some people think that you can understand the absolute truth by argument and by logic, then you will understand. It's not possible. The absolute truth is revealed from within the heart by one's purity, by one's hearing from the pure devotees of the Lord, the science of Krishna consciousness. So Srila Prabhupada also mentioned Sankaracharya. Sankaracharya stopped this system of religion in India and forced it to go outside of India. Lord Buddha brought people away from the Vedic literatures because they were not understanding them. And then Sankaracharya, who is an incarnation of Lord Shiva, brought people back to the Vedic literatures, reestablished the authority of the Vedic literatures, but because people were still atheists, there was an atheistic conclusion of the Vedic literatures. And then various acharyas refined things, helped people to understand the real conclusion of the Vedas, which culminated in Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's giving us the understanding of Achintya Veda Veda Tattva, which is complete in itself for realization of the Vedic literatures. So, these are the points that Srila Prabhupada covered in the purport, and we can learn from these that to reestablish the Vedic system is very difficult. It's not an easy thing to do. But even the remnants that are there from the Vedic culture are very valuable. Srila Prabhupada stated that the Vedic culture is just like an elephant. An elephant, when it's alive, it can do so much work and perform so many activities. It's very valuable. But even dead elephant, you can get the tusk, ivory, and usage for so many different parts of its body. So in the same way, the Vedic culture, the Vedic civilization, although it's not being practiced today, still the remnants of the Vedic culture are very valuable. And there, you know, we can see that they're there in India. To reestablish the Vedic culture is very difficult. Therefore, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu emphasized the chanting of the holy name. Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama. And hearing, in association with devotees, the scriptures, Srimad Bhagavatam, Bhagavad Gita. So these two things are actually the essence of the Vedic literature. Anyway, the essence of the Vedas. Vaidaischacharvayar ahameva vedyo. Krishna says, by all of the Vedas, I am to be known. So if we engage in these activities of chanting the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra, hearing the science of Krishna consciousness in association with devotees from Srimad Bhagavatam and Bhagavad Gita, will actually come to the conclusion of the Vedas. And that is, we'll be elevated to the point that we can go back home, back to the spiritual world, which is the ultimate goal of life. Hare Krishna. Are there any questions?
Hare Krishna. From the shlokas we learn that the high elevated devotees are cursing each other. When the curse comes, means he is angry. When the curse is implemented, that means there is some punishment to the receiving party. Now these are not the etiquettes of the true devotee or a true elevated soul. Can you please throw some light on this?
Well, one of the lessons that we learn from this part of the Bhagavatam is that one has to be very careful. As you said, even a practiced devotee even a devotee that's elevated, can be carried away by anger. This anger can finish our devotional service if we become too angry. So Srila Prabhupada has warned us that if you're living in an association of devotees, you have to be very careful. And to control your anger, that prescription is also there, that to conquer over anger, you have to conquer over your the senses. The senses should never be engaged in sense gratification, because by sense gratification, what follows is frustration. Sense gratification is never satisfying. It's never satisfying. Prabhupada gives the example that it's like putting oil on a fire. Right? You have this fire blazing, you put oil. So it appears like it goes down for a little while if you plop a bunch of oil on a fire, but then it comes back. And it not only comes back, but it comes roaring back. Right? So by this frustration, right? What follows frustration? Anger. Become angry. Krodad bhavi samoha, samoha vipramukkama. Right? And while contemplating the objects of the senses, you develop attachment. From attachment, you know, there's lust. Lust brings anger. Okay? So this is the unfortunate situation that we're in. Right? Although we've come to the Krishna consciousness movement, right? Which means becoming free from these anarthas, these unwanted things, somehow or another we still think we're going to be happy here in the material world. Or that we're using the philosophy of Krishna consciousness for furthering our position in the material world. And it's done on all different kinds of levels. All different kinds of levels. And therefore, Prabhupada says, if you've come to the Krishna consciousness, and at the same time you want to enjoy in the material world, you're in a very confused situation. Right? So, you know, we see that some devotees use the philosophy, well, Prabhuji, I'm engaging this in Krishna's service. Well, if you really are engaging, you know, things in Krishna's service, it's fine. But if in the name of engaging things in Krishna's service, you have some pratistha, right? That's going to develop into anger. And if I become angry with you, you're going to become angry with me, and therefore the whole cursing, county cursing thing goes on. And it all stems from not understanding what we're doing here in Krishna consciousness. Thinking that, yeah, Krishna says always think of him, that's okay, but I'm preaching. You know, I'm preaching. Okay, yes, we have to preach. We have to explain to people the philosophy of Krishna consciousness. But it should be done purely. I'm not preaching to get some money so I can do my score, so people will tali bajate hai when it's announced in front of the deities, or that I'm, you know, I have some solid position within a temple, or I can get facilities that others can't get. This is not why we're here. We're not here for silk cloth, fancy cell phones, nice cars. These are all impediments to devotional service. Yes, everything can be used in Krishna's service. There's no doubt about it. But am I really using it in Krishna's service? Or am I stuck, just like the gross materialist, in thinking, aham bhogi, mera? That we have to analyze. And if we're stuck in that mentality, very confused state, never can become happy, never can become satisfied, even though I'm chanting. In fact, with this weed, this materialistic mentality, my chanting, which is the watering process of the on the creeper of devotional service, will nourish the weed. See how dangerous it is? Now the weed that is there by my chanting is becoming more powerful. It's like if you have a garden in St. Louis. When I go to St. Louis, I make the garden every year. You know? Plow up everything and put in the plants. But the weeds grow, you know? And if you don't get the weeds out, you may be watering the plants, but the weeds will overcome the flowers. And they won't grow nicely. Right? So our devotional creeper is just like that. It's like flower gardens. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's flower garden. Right? But if we don't pull out the weeds, the watering process, which is sitting in the class, hearing and chanting, and chanting our mala nicely, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, it serves to water the weeds. So much so that we can't differentiate. We don't have the spiritual buddhi to realize what is a weed and what is actually a kripa. We get confused. What is what? And then due to that frustration, we become angry. Right? And we blame everyone else and everything else for our frustrated situation. When actually it's my own inability to distinguish what is a weed and what is actually a kripa. So don't despair. Because we have association with devotees, devotees will help us. They'll help us say, Prabhuji, you got a bunch of weeds in your garden. They're going to help us. So therefore, we have the International Society for Krishna Consciousness. We're there to help one another recognize what we're doing and how to be progressive in devotional service. Right? But there's always that danger of becoming angry and saying something, insulting someone, being insulted. So this is the prescription. Be careful. In devotional service, it's just like the razor's edge. If you know how to shave nicely, you can get a nice shave. But if you don't know how to shave, you'll get cut. All bloodshed will be there. So we have to be careful.
Which is a corollary to my question is this, that when somebody gives curse or somebody gives benediction, is he not coming the way of the Lord who has destined somebody's future? Suppose he's destined to, I'm destined to suffer, and somebody gives benediction. So is he not coming the way of the Lord's implementation of the laws?
Well, rather you should see it that, well, a devotee would see that if someone like Lord Shiva, he wasn't disturbed at all. He's the greatest Vaishnava. He was insulted by Daksha, but he wasn't affected because he was absorbed in thinking of Ananta, the Supreme Lord. So due to that absorption, he wasn't affected by the so-called insult or curse. Right? So that's the mentality of the devotee. Even if a devotee is in some unfavorable situation, he still thinks this is the mercy of the Lord to help me progress, to help me make advancement in devotional service. That's his mentality. No one can come in the way of the Lord. The Lord will do what he has to do. If someone may be used, and a devotee can see like that, as an implement of the Lord. If someone's given me some trouble, I should not see, oh, this person was like that, but I should see it's the Lord trying to help me come to a higher platform, to learn how to tolerate things in a particular situation so that I can make further advancement. Okay.
Hare Krishna Prabhuji. Sometimes we feel difficulty to answer one question. As you said, that it's the duty of the king to protect Praja. Praja means all the living beings in his kingdom, not only human beings. So people generally ask, then why in the Vedic system the kings go for hunting? And we gave them logic, okay, because they are Kshatriyas, they are allowed to do certain things, they have to, you know, test their power and everything, they have to practice that. But ultimately then again question comes, but they are supposed to protect the Praja, then why they hunt?
Well, the way Prabhupada explains it is that they are they protect by having this ability to use certain weapons, you know? So they have to keep that very acute and up to the mark. So sometimes they may go out and hunt some lion or some dangerous animal to make sure that their skills of archery or whatever are up to the mark, so that actually they can protect the people.
May I just answer? I mean, this is not from the spiritual angle, but it's very not from the spiritual angle.
Yeah.
But ecologically today, killing or culling of animals is good, because sometimes, you know, a herd outgrows what its optimum size, so it has to be culled. To protect the herd, you need to kill certain piece or, you know, certain of the species in the herd. So that is one of the probable reasons why hunting was allowed in a restricted manner in those times. I mean, this is a very it's a modern
ecological answer.
Very ecological answer.
I never heard Prabhupada explain it like that.
No. It's not a spiritual answer, but
we could research that.
In today's day, this is actually happening.
Yeah, just like in the deer season in America, there's no natural predators for deer anymore. There used to be in North America mountain lions, panthers, bears, etc. But there aren't anymore. Wolves, and they would keep the deer population down. So they issue a license for hunters to go out and hunt deers. You're saying like that? We could look into that. Yes?
If we find that the Supreme Personality of Godhead appeared as Lord Buddha to preach atheism, and Lord Shiva, the greatest Vaishnava, also appeared to preach atheism in the form of Mayavad philosophy, seems this is a very dangerous place, this material world, and we really require personal guidance. And for example, even Baladev Vidyabhushan, when he was called to Jaipur to reestablish, to preach to the king, to convince him to not accept the Smarta conception about the worship of Srimati Radharani, he also had to fudge things. And, you know, he's an acharya in our Gaudiya Vaishnav line. It seems that, in Srila Prabhupada also, he was preaching to hippies, trying to somehow or other preach to them and get them to give up their nasty habits and at least to chant Hare Krishna. So sometimes he didn't always present the full truth, and he even said that, well, if I told you everything, you'd faint, right? One time he said that. So it seems very dangerous if we just rely on the recorded histories of what things have been done in the past, that we might become bewildered and deviated from the path. That we may follow some, maybe we may follow some teaching that wasn't meant for us to follow, but it was just meant for a time, place, and circumstance situation. By some great acharya may have said it, but it may have been meant for a particular circumstance, and it may not be meant for us. So maybe you can comment on how we can protect ourselves from such misconceptions entering into our own personal spiritual lives.
Well, in answer to that question, a couple of points that you made up. Prabhupada mentions here about the followers of Lord Shiva indulging in wine and meat, keeping long hair on one's head, not taking bath, and smoking ganja. It's the hippies. That's what they were. They were followers of Lord Shiva. And Prabhupada said they were our best customers. Yeah, another point that I thought about is that, sometimes Krishna consciousness in India is kind of booming. There's lots of people that are coming to the temple, and there's lots of devotees that are joining this and that. Which was kind of like it was in the 60s and the 70s in ISKCON in North America. Every Sunday feast was packed with these people. And devotees had lots of people to preach to, etc., etc. And they were joining like anything. Remember in St. Louis in 1973, it seemed like every week there was a new bhakta. But it's not like that now. There's very few devotees in the temples. And, of course, there is a good attendance at the Sunday feast, but they're mostly Indian, professional people, and there are not so many Americans coming to the temple these days. So devotees there are wondering, why? How is it? In this particular instance, we can see that, over a long stretch of time, Lord Buddha had a particular purpose that he was preaching atheism far, and also Shankaracharya, who's ultimately a devotee, they, had a purpose. Lord Buddha wanted to bring people away from meat eating, using the excuse of the Vedas, so he denied the Vedas. And then once that was done, Lord Shankaracharya, incarnation of Lord Shiva, wanted to bring people back to the Vedas, right? To set the scene for Vaishnavacharyas and Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu to spread the Sankirtan movement. But I was thinking that, if you were a devotee in Lord Buddha's time and you see this atheistic philosophy that's spreading everywhere, you might have become, a little bewildered at that. Or see that Sankaracharya's Mayavad philosophy is spreading everywhere, you would become, gee whiz, what's going on in the world today? But it's the Lord's bigger picture. So in the same way, sometimes we think, well, how are these, like you said, these opposing philosophies or things that don't seem to be going right, how are they going on? And it could be that we're just not seeing the Lord's bigger picture on how He wants things to progress, because we're not on that level that we see the big picture. But yes, now, just to address your point more directly, we always have to be careful, because it may appear like something that's bona fide, but actually it's not. It's not for us. So how to be protected from that? I think the safest way to be protected is just to refer back to Srila Prabhupada's books. Right? Go to Prabhupada's books. Try to study them very carefully. Believe it or not, there's devotees here that haven't read the whole Srimad Bhagavatam. Now, I won't have you raise your hands like Makhanlal does. That's okay. That's between you and Krishna. But you should read Srila Prabhupada's books. Everything is there. In that same story that I told, there's about the Buddhist being delivered by Lord Chaitanya, there's a wonderful purport that delineates all of the nine different points of Buddhist philosophy and then defeats them, also with logic. So everything is contained in Srila Prabhupada's books. We should study them seriously, discuss them amongst ourselves, and then we'll be protected from any kind of philosophy that is not meant for us. So if you want to study Srila Prabhupada's books and really enter into them, you also have to distribute Srila Prabhupada's books, because that will open the door of Prabhupada's books more carefully for you, right? To get the knowledge, you have to give the knowledge. And there's no better way. Prabhupada said, what is the benefit of your 20-minute lecture? In one ear and out the other, he said. Distribute my books. That will be solid work, right? So, giving the knowledge helps us to receive more of the knowledge. Therefore, Srila Prabhupada emphasized to all of us, distribute books, distribute books, distribute books. It's a very important aspect of getting the knowledge. You give the knowledge, you become a fit receptacle to receive the knowledge. Is that okay?
So, within Prabhupada teachings, sometimes like Prabhupada mentioned a few things according to time, place, circumstances.
Yeah.
Especially in his letters or somewhere. So that also sometimes use and got bewildered by reading that, you know, whether we should use that particular in our life or we should use as a counter-argument. Prabhupada said that. Use this word. So what should we refer? The books? We should refer for...
No, use your intelligence. Krishna is there in your heart and he's trying to get through to you with all different means, and one of the means is through your intelligence. He's trying to get through to your intelligence. So you go back and look in the folio and see if Prabhupada really did say it. First of all, then in what context he said it. Try to understand it. Right? Krishna's there. He'll guide you. He's in your heart. He'll help you. If he sees that you're actually trying to follow the acharya of this age, Srila Prabhupada, then he'll give you the intelligence to understand it and how it applies to you in your life.
All questions?
Hare Krishna.
So, in context of this shloka, in the ancient Vedic times, did only Kshatriya used to go, they were sent to the Brahmanas for education, the Kshatriya children, or children from the other castes were also sent, and along with the spiritual knowledge, were they also taught for example, I know that Kshatriyas were taught warfare techniques. So if others were being sent, were they being taught the trading or the other skills?
Yeah, they taught it.